Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
From the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I give it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that?
No, Sensei.
No mercy.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your Black Panther party.
Jake LaTondres.
I am bad news. I'm going to break you.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slice.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, been saved.
Well, that's it, boys. I've been redeemed. The preacher done washed away all my sins and transgressions.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
It's showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, and in the Duck South studios with me today, Jake LaTondres, and we've got a special guest opening up the podcast with us today, Mr. Will Primos. Guys, how are y'all?
Just fine. How are y'all?
Doing well. It's nice to meet you, Mr. Will, and it's good to hear your voice again, Mr. Rocky.
Yeah, it's good to be back on with, man. Have two friends on a podcast.
Well, I never mind anybody lying to me as long as it made me feel good. So
I'm going to put that one in my back pocket there, Will. That's a good one.
Good deal.
We ran out of time the last time Will was on here, and there was so many other things that he and I have had conversations about in the past that I said, Will, look, I really would like for you to come back on because you have so much to teach others, and they're willing to listen because the numbers were there. The last time you were on, they were just outrageous. So people are willing to listen to what you have to say. Unlike most that know you.
Well, you're mighty kind. I don't know that I've got, I was just so lucky to be raised by such incredible loving mother and father, 93 and 91, still living, doing great, healthy, and to be able to share a lot of time with them at that age in their lives when they worked so hard and their depression children and both of them went to Ole Miss during the Depression, and you learn the values of stuff, and if you raise children up in the way of the Lord and you teach them right, they may go off into the wilderness to experiment and find their way, but you teach them right, they'll come back to that foundation because that's what it is. It's a foundation. And that's biblical as well. You make a good foundation, you got something to stand on, your house won't blow away when the winds come. Because the winds are coming.
So,
and I don't care who you are, the winds are coming. Somewhere
so
in your life.
True.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, at my age, and the people that I'm surrounded with, a lot of my friends, their children are going through their teen years right now. And even some family and friends that have little older children, adults now, you see it so pretty much every time, no matter how good they were when they were little bitty kids to how bad they were when they were little bitty kids, if they come from a good foundation, you know, they always go through a wild sowing oats period in their lives, but it always comes back around. And I feel so confident that what you just said is true. They often, you know, get into that conversation with my friends that are concerned about their kids, and having a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 5-month-old myself right now, I'm totally confident. While it's stressful at times, I'm totally confident that as my wife and I build this foundation for our children and we teach them, you know, what we believe is the right way as parenting goes, that they're gonna go wild at some point, but they're gonna come back around to it, and I'm just not gonna sweat that because I know it's true.
Yeah, how old are you, Jake?
I'm 48.
48. Okay. How old are you, Rocky?
41.
Mm-hmm. I'm 66, so I come from a little bit different generation. So I was born in 52. You know, so it's just it's amazing. You know, I used to try to have a talk about the word sacrifice, because life is full of choices. No matter what, you've got a choice to make every day when you get out of bed. You know, you make a choice before you go to bed. What am I going to try to do tomorrow? What am I going to try to accomplish? What am I going to try to get done? What have I got on my plate? You know, what does that involve? And as you go through different stages of life, you know, that changes drastically. And as you're trying to grow up, get a high school education, possibly go to college, get a college education, get a master's, you know, get through med school, whatever you're doing in life, all that requires different disciplines and different strategies to get through those moments. And you have different priorities as you're building that. If you start thinking about it, you better start thinking about retirement. And the earlier you start thinking about it, because it's going to come, and it's going to come faster than you think. And when we set up Social Security, and this country has set it up at 62, that's pretty young at 62, but some people choose to retire. But getting to 65, you've got to sign up for Medicare, whether you want to or not. It's law. And you got to register. You got to sign up. And that was a real awakening moment for me. I'm going, you got to be kidding. I got to sign up for Medicare and to go through that. But life changes. And I guess the secret for me is I try to learn. And I've always liked older people a lot. I've always hung around older people. And as a kid, I chose older people more than I did kids my own age to be friends with. And if you get lucky and find the right ones, they will mentor you and help you and teach you and share with you, because life's experience is the greatest teacher of all. And my Sunday school teacher, is a guy named Chuck Stewart. And he's younger than me. He's got a son, went to Afghanistan. He got blown up, put back together. And so his son is disabled. But he functions great. He does good. He's had, I don't know how many operations, 50 operations, whatever. And he started, when he had the time and got kind of where he could function again, he started a place called Downrange, where young people come and get to experience life. The biggest thing you got working against you is if you don't have loving, good, caring parents. And people go through divorces. Some children are born without parents. They don't have a set of parents, but a father figure and a mother to nurture you and raise you that you love and you trust. And some parents are so guilty, in my opinion, and I'm not trying to judge them, I'm making an observation, of not disciplining their children. And when you don't discipline children and they don't learn what sacrifice is and what no means and what holding up their end of the bargain, and they allow them to act out and stuff, they take that on in the rest of their lives, and they don't become as good of contributing members of society. And going back to my Sunday school teacher, where I was going with that, he said a quote one day in Sunday school that his son taught him. And my words were always, you know, you sacrifice, you get what whatever, you know, when you sacrifice for something tomorrow, you get what that was worth. But this guy's name is C.J. Stewart, and C.J. had this quote, and his daddy quoted it, and I went, oh my gosh, when Sunday school was over, I walked up here and I said, I got to write down exact words. That is the best quote for life that I have found to this date of my life. And that quote is that discipline is simply turning down what I want now so later I can have what I want most. Whether it be a child that you want to grow up to be a contributing member of society and to be successful and happy, if that's what you really want, you're going to have the discipline as a parent to discipline that child correctly as they're young. And there's different children with different challenges. Some have higher IQ. Some of them have, you know, possibly Down syndrome. There's all kind of issues. Love crosses all those barriers. And I'll say it again, discipline is simply turning down what I want now so later I can have what I want most. And that was C.J. Stewart. And I can't tell you how strong that is. And so when I'm thinking, man, I sure would like to have that extra piece of pie. Man, I sure would like to, you know, you if I want to be in shape and I want to enjoy the elk season that's coming up, which I do, and I leave September the 10th, and I'm going to be hunting. I'm going to be calling for my friend Brad Ferris in Colorado, southern Colorado, and I'm going to be hunting in New Mexico and calling for whoever down there. We'll have a whole camp of people down there. And if I want to be in shape and I want to keep up, because I'm 66 and some of these guys are in their 20s, if I want to keep up and I want to enjoy the moment and I want to be able to get to that next top ridge top to see that sunrise or sunset, then I'm going to have to be disciplined. I'm going to have to leave this lowland, this sea level country I live in with a high humidity, and I'm going to have to be in shape. So you're never going to be able to get enough oxygen because up there it's just thinner. And but if my lungs and heart are strong, I'm going to recover quicker and I'm going to do fine. So I've got to give up something to get that. So discipline is simply turning down what I want what I want now, so later I can have what I want most. And the same thing goes, and I will say this, and you'll hear me talk about faith and religion a little bit. And I love the Lord. I'm scared to death of him. And I want to do what he wants me to do. And I want to be a contributing factor to his kingdom every day of my life. And if what I want is salvation, then I'm going to have to discipline myself to learn all I can, to learn his word, to practice his word. And so in my morning, one of my prayers is, Lord, don't give me riches. Don't give me wealth. Don't make this business deal I'm going to do successful. Give me discernment. Let me discern as I move down the road what's right and what's not right, what's truthful, what's not, and what's good. As you go through life and as you go from a child to junior high school to college, you are going to have all the opportunities in the world, especially when you're in business, to compromise your true character and to compromise what you really know is right. As an example, I had somebody send me a bill one time. I didn't have any money. I was struggling. I was borrowing money from the bank. I didn't know how I was going to make payroll. I didn't have but about 20 employees at the time. I didn't know. But they sent me an invoice for the month's stuff that I had them do, and the contractor. And I saw it was a part of that invoice that didn't include. They had missed one of the things that they had done for me. And it's a couple $1,000. I remember sitting there and thinking, man, I could shut that would help me get through the month if I just didn't pay them that $2,000. I'm just not going to say anything. And I remember because of my upbringing, because of my daily prayer, I was able to be hit between the eyes right then. Don't you dare compromise what you know is right. And I called them and they sent me the proper bill and we got it paid. And Lord have mercy, one of my big dealers paid me early and I had enough money to make payroll. So, I mean, God's in charge. I mean, it's going to work out. But you've got to build that into your life. You can't just one day decide I'm going to try to do good. You've got to learn it. Mm-hmm. It's a learned thing. So anyway, I didn't mean to.
And it's full time. It's not part time.
It's full time. It's every day. And when
full
you deal
time,
with people,
every moment.
Yeah. When you deal with people that don't treat you right, somebody said, how do you know if you can trust somebody? I said, trust them. To do what? I said, trust them. You trust them, and you real quickly will find out if you can trust them.
Exactly.
Anyway. I've heard you say that a lot of times.
Through life looking over your shoulder, or you'll never build a relationship with anyone because you're paranoid about everyone. You have to eliminate through the process
elimination. I've met people like that
to get to the good people, right?
Yeah, that's right. I've met people like that.
Sure. I was thinking about this because you and I have known each other well since 07. This is the first year you were in Belzona. I did a little filming with y'all when it came to the incoming DVDs. And you were talking about befriend people that are older to you. Ask them questions. Let them give you wisdom and knowledge. And I was thinking about this, and I know this may be crazy to throw into this podcast, but there's a couple of things that you probably you're not even aware that you sat me down and taught me a couple of things. And I want to tell you this.
When back then, when you were at the farm?
Yeah. No. Just throughout our friendship up till today.
Okay.
And one of them, I want to see if you remember these, because they may help somebody that's listening to this. We were in a business meeting, you and I together. Oh, I guess it was probably, 2010 or 11, somewhere in there.
No, that was a mistake thinking about I was going in business with you.
Well, I got up and gave a presentation. I guess it was in front of you and Jimmy. Brad was there.
Oh, I remember that now. Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of who else. The marketing.
It had to do with social media. Mike Powell.
That's right.
Probably.
Mike Powell. Mike Powell exactly was in there. And after the meeting was over with, you had asked me a question. And I responded with you, and I don't know why this popped into my head, but I said, well, during the meeting, I'm giving that presentation, you asked me a question. I said, well, just to be honest with you, Will, this is blah, 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 the answer. And I'll never forget, after that meeting was over with, you pulled me back into the office and you said, listen, we've gotten to be good friends. I just want to tell you this. Don't ever say that in the front of a sentence. If you have to say that, that means that you probably lied to me sometime in the past. You remember telling me that?
I can imagine me doing it. I don't remember it, but I can imagine me doing it.
Yeah,
it's something people say. It's kind of got built into the language for some people. But you're kind of saying, well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and tell you what I really think rather than trying to sugarcoat it. I don't need that. I don't need anybody telling me what I want to hear. I need somebody telling me what I need to hear. And here's a perfect example. I got a friend. And we've recently gotten to be fairly close and be able to talk in ways that you couldn't talk to somebody that you really cared about, wanted to help. And he wanted to make a presentation to me and a friend, ask for some help in something that he's got going on in business. And so he was sour over some people he had done some business with, and he talked about it, but then as he went on and on, he said it two more times in a little bit different way and began to get a negative look on his face. He quit smiling. He quit looking at us. He was venting, but yet he was adding a negative flavor and element into our time together.
and he's really meeting this guy that I brought in that could help him for the first time in a intimate, in a strong way. And so, you know, that went on. So we got through with our meeting, and I called him a couple of days later, and I said, I want to share with you something, because you're too good. You got too much going for you, and I want to tell you how it came across. Now, some people would say, you're risking a friendship. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm putting my cards on the table to strengthen a friendship and make a – because if he can't receive – honestly, I may be wrong, but if he can't dissect, if he can't discern, if he can't examine what I got to say and decide if there's any truth to it or not, and he just wants to discount it very quickly and hold it against me for speaking up, then he's not really the friend that I think he could be and is. And we'll separate a little bit. But I told him what I thought, which was not flattering. And I said, I may be wrong, but I think you just need to look back and think about what you said and think about how you were feeling. And he said, man, I really appreciate you being willing to say that to me. And he called me back the next day and he says, man, I've thought about that, and I've gone over that meeting, and says, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time and being willing to say those things to me. Nobody would do that. That's not what I wanted to hear, but it's what I needed to hear. And he said, I, for one, can't stand negative stuff. And there I was being a part of that. And so my point in saying that is that you've got to be able in life to help people go from one step to the next and always climb it up and benefit them. And they'll be drawn to you, and you'll be closer and better for it. And, you know, I believe what goes around comes around. I got into a situation, needed some help. I didn't have any clue where to go. And I'm just trying to handle it myself. It involved some construction issues. And when he called me back and was thanking me and we're closing the conversation off, and he says, so what you got going on? I said, man, I got da-da-da-da-da. He could have just said, oh, I'm so sorry. I hope you do. Hope you get help. Okay. He could have said that. Instead, he said, Will, I think you should call this guy. He is one of the finest, most honest, best, and he is in that field big time. That happened last Friday. I made that phone call. That man was standing next to me in 2 hours later, and he has changed so much for me. And all because I wanted to do what I felt like I should do. I didn't want to run from it. And so that in life, you're going to have those chances. And you got to tell people that you've got to have the right heart and the right frame of mind. You got to be doing it from the right angle. It's not to tear anybody down; it's to build them up. Those are things that can help you through life so much. Those kind of attitudes, those kind of decisions that you've got to make. You've got life is a world of decisions. And setting up your standard, knowing where you want to go, and then making decisions involved in that direction. Always knowing, for me, keeping Christ's lessons and his journey in the foremost of my mind. I don't always achieve it. I'm not always perfect. Nobody, and I'm saying right now, nobody is perfect. And I don't care what they are, the greatest preacher in the world, Billy Graham or whoever it is, every one of us have the same issues in life. Ain't none of us, just because we choose a certain profession or we've achieved. So many people look at other people in life and go, oh, man, you've just done so good. Everybody judges you by where you are in the financial and successful world, you know. Having a great family and being able to hold your head high and walk in the way the Lord wants you to, that's real success. That's real success.
Well, I'm going to tell you scenario number two, because I know this is important to you. because how I know, you pulled me to the side and told me. In about 2009, you asked me to take, I guess it was the guys that had bought, the first set of guys, the investors that bought Primos. You remember we went on a guided hunt. Mm-hmm. You said, man, listen, I want to go to that flooded timber where we filmed that video 2 years ago to the blind. I want to cook in the blind. Yeah, I want to take these guys. I want to cook for them, blah, blah, blah. I want to kill a lot of ducks. Well, all I heard was kill a lot of ducks. Well, the ducks weren't really working around that blind, so we went up and sat a little bit further back. After that hunt, we didn't end up shooting. We stood in the water, which was no fun for those guys. I don't know if you even remember that. But
I remember. I got cold.
And I was down at the camp, I guess a day or two later, and you pulled me to the side and you said, listen, when somebody tells you something in life, hear everything that they say. I know that you're a guy and you want us to kill ducks, but it really wasn't about to these guys to just kill ducks. It was about the experience. So always listen to what somebody says, what everything somebody has to say.
Well, you know, that's probably one of the things I've had to work on the hardest. Is listening. Because a lot of times I'm listening to respond rather than listening to hear. And I'll interrupt you before you get through. That's so wrong. You know, and I'm still guilty of it. But my brain goes too fast. So what I meant, you know, by that was take the time to listen. And doing it in person is always better when you listen to somebody because there's body language involved, there's eyes, you know, it's a lot more communication than just a voice. But anyway, that's where I was going with
that. No, I think it's very important to listen to people, what they have to say. But
you did a great job. You took us, you thought up taking us to them catfish ponds one day, and they loved that. I mean, there were spoonbills and stuff like that, but it was fun for them, and that's what was important.
Well, just in the last conversation. Go ahead, Jake.
I was just going to say that this conversation reminds me so many times of conversations that didn't necessarily go as agreeable as this one's going with my employees, and the nature of one of my businesses is, you know, the people that I hire are really young people, say from 21 to 28, 29 years old. And, you know, you as a business owner, you know, you try to implement a systematic approach, like a team approach. So everyone does everything consistently and everyone has a niche and a job to do. And then, you know, you get into almost mentoring because you're trying to teach these young people how to A, believe in themselves, how to trust you and respect you, because at the end of the day, the final decision comes on your shoulders and it's your liability. You know, your business is your liability at some point. And all these things that we're talking about, I wish my employees would listen into it, because it's an echo of where I've tried to, you know, instill within them to help them become better employees, ultimately for me, so that my business runs smoother and with more integrity and all those things that we're talking about. So
should make you more profitable. And there's so many good things that come from that. So, I hear what you're saying. You know, I had to learn in building a business. I began to ask myself this question. So how can I do exactly what you just said, Jake? How can I get these employees, because I was getting more and more, I had, you know, 220 at one point, and how do I get them to carry this company in the direction and in the way that I want it done, that I think that will benefit all of us, and will serve our customer. And I ended up having to do some things I didn't really want to do, like make a company manual that was much earlier on, but I had about 50 employees. I'd be like, golly, I got to have a company manual. I got to set it down. So you get more and more employees. I don't care if you don't get but two. Company manual, setting down what your policy is. You can break them. You're the boss. You can do whatever you want. But having something in writing, because you're going to have problems come up, and have something that you can revert to if you need to. And then having a mission statement. And, you know, I studied mission statements in college and business, and, you know, they were all kind of the exercises I went through. I didn't feel very good about them. You know, you say it's supposed to be a short one or two sentence deal that you can express what you got to do. Well, what you want to do in your business, what is your business's mission? And when I got ready to do that, I said, okay, I've got 7 executives, and I am going to put them in a room. We're going to have a one-hour meeting once a week until we get this done. And I had them read a book called Good to Great. A fantastic book about great business.
It went from good
to great. And that book really reinforced things, because I was doing a lot of what that book talked about, but I hadn't been able to communicate that to my employees. So one of the things that I did in the mission statement is I got these 7 executives together, and we talked about it, and I gave everybody these printed out forms that I would write up all these questions and have them answer them, and then we would debate them. And that got started because I had an advertising agent one time. I said, I'm late. I got to get this ad campaign going, da 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 da. So he came up with these ads real quickly, came and presented them to us, had these cut sheets done and showed what they were going to be and how we were going to film them, and they were going to be on TV and all this kind of stuff. And they were horrible. And I told him, so we got through, and I told him, so these are just all over the place. They're just not any good, in my opinion. He said, well, I tell you what, that's what I could come up with this quick. Here's what we need to do. I need to get you a form with a lot of questions, and you need to get about 10 people from in the company and 10 people from outside the company who know you, who don't know you, who just know about the product or end users, and they need to answer these questions. And then y'all need to get into a room, the 10 company employees need to get in a room and read all the answers to the people that are outside the company, people in the company, and debate every one of the answers and come up with one answer for every question. Y'all decide what the answer to the question is. So, okay. So he gave me the papers. I got everybody together. Ended up with 5 on the outside, 10 on the inside. We did it. And there was one question the last question was, if you've got a product on the shelf or you've got a service that you're presenting, why would somebody choose your product or your service if it cost about the same, has the same looking brochure, same kind of packaging, it gives about the same benefits to the person who's buying it or you're providing the service for, no matter what that is, why would they buy your service, your product, over somebody else's service or product? And the question was answered by, everybody chose the one person's answer the best they could, and the answer was, because they like you. How do you make them like you? Well, you can't like somebody if you don't know them. So we began a series of ads to tell people who we are, what we stood for, and what we believed in. And we did that. We communicated it on packaging. We communicated it on TV ads. And it was an incredible success. But they had to know us. So we were lucky. We had a TV show. We were producing DVDs and videos and just, we had all this stuff going, so we had an opportunity to change the way we were presenting that so people could learn more about us. Tell the story. Tell us, so who is Will Primos? Who's Jimmy Primos? You know, who's Brad Ferris? So that was just hugely successful. And so then I went and took it a step further from reading Good to Great, and we formulated a new mission statement. And the mission statement was, it's a full page. The real mission statement is just a couple of sentences. And the mission statement is, Primo's mission and goal is to make each and every customer successful at selling Primo's products. That's it. The mission and goal is to make each and every customer successful at selling Primo's products. So here's how you find out if that's a good mission statement. Somebody from customer service walks into my office and says, I got a customer. I got him on hold. He's very upset. Da-da-da-da-da. And what's the mission statement? I'd say to him. It's on the wall. Every employee had to sign it when they were hired. It's in their file. It's on every wall. And there were probably 50 of them posted throughout that 110,000 square foot building. And I'd say, read the mission statement. Someone would look at me and do what? I said, well, go read the mission statement. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Go read the mission statement. Primo's mission and goal is to make each and every customer successful at selling Primo's product. Well, that boils down to the dealer. But the dealer, somebody sold that product to that customer, and now the customer is dissatisfied. So the real answer is, if you're going to make the person successful who sold it to the customer, make the customer happy. I said, the only time you don't have to do that is if the customer is unreasonable. If they're cussing you, we don't allow any of that. And so I then supported that mission statement with a series of list of other things that help teach the mission statement. And it worked so good that the whole company and the culture began to firm up and everybody knew what to do. And I read a book called Worst to First that was another book that reinforced some of my ideas. It's by a guy named Gordon Bethune. He was the CEO of Continental Airlines, and they had been bankrupt twice, and he was a pilot, and they hired him to turn the company around. And the example that will help bring us together a little bit for you is they had a policy that all pets that were in little carry-ons had to stay in the carry-on. And so they had a stewardess on the plane, and the little dog was whimpering, you know, up under the seat in front of her. She took the dog out and put it in its lap, and the dog shut up and went to sleep. Well, she came by and saw the dog sitting in his lap. Company policy, put the dog in the carry box. But she knew from going to meetings and understanding the culture of the company, I can break that rule. So every rule can be broken, and every employee knew that. And so that stewardess broke that rule and let that puppy stay in that lap. The puppy was happy, didn't bother nobody else. The lady was happy, and everything worked like a charm. Got ready to land, put the dog back in the little carry-on thing, and nobody missed a beat. So rules can be made to be broken. But there's three intersecting circles taught by good to great. And you take those circles, you draw them out, and you say, it supports the mission. What are we deeply passionate about? Ask yourself that question in your business, in your life. What am I deeply passionate about? And we decided that one should be the success of our customers selling Primo's products. It mirrored the mission. Number two, what can we be best in the world at? Answer to that was key. What can Primo's be the best in the world at? Oh, I had executives saying, building the greatest game calls, building the most accurate game calls, making the best outerwear, making the best bow hunting vest, making the best game camera. No. The answer to what can we be best in the world at? Easy to do business with. Every policy we make it easy to do business with. For instance, we had a policy that if a dealer called us, whether he bought it from a distributor or from us, we set him up as a dealer in our system, had his address, had all his contact information sitting there. And if he had a product that he got that a customer returned, more than likely we were going to tell him, throw it in the trash can. I'm going to credit your account for that product right now. Get the customer another product or refund him. I'm going to credit your account right now for that. And when you place an order with Primo's, we're going to credit that on your account. I built the accounts, built the base, got more dealers. So you've got to remember the policies you set have got to be easy for your customer to function with, or he's going to go somewhere else. He's got too much to do. He's got to answer the phone. He's got to fix a broken pipe. He's got to fix the cash register. He's got to open the door. He's got to go to the bank. He's got to hire employees. He's got to fix a gun. Whatever the dealer had to do. And then what drives your economic engine? What drives it? And our answer was profit per product. That example that Good to Great gave was Walgreens stores. Walgreens stores could have chosen profit per product, But I mean, they could have chosen profit per store, but they chose profit per product, same as we did, because we have several dealers, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands all over the United States, Canada, and Europe. So if it's profit per product, and it could have been profit per store for Walgreens, but you go to New York, you'll have a Walgreens on every corner of a block. So it's profit per product, and it's convenience for the customer to get there. So when you say what drives your economic engine, you establish that, and then it became margin for Primo's. And we had 65% gross margin on all of our products. And it drove the economic engine that made the company successful and allowed us to give bigger bonuses, take care of our employees, give raises, pay more than any other of the industries near us so we could get the best employees, and all that began to work. And then you break it down into, what are your goals? Our goals at Primo's, and every employee knew this, we build, design, package, inventory, hunting products that are shipped on time. These products are then backed by intensive marketing that brands own, not only the mind, but the heart as well. Sorry about that. My other phone's ringing. The final goal in our mission is to provide support and service to all our customers, pointing it back to the customer again. And then I came up with another one, company products that keep us on autopilot. Our foundation is based on two principles that ensure we are headed toward fulfilling our mission and goals on a minute-by-minute basis. First, Primo's recognizes the value of all employees. Without employees, there would be no company. We strive to provide safe working conditions as well as competitive salaries and benefits. Employees include all Primo's staff, pro staff, and manufacturers' representatives. We take it not only from the employees, but we take it to the next step, to those who serve us. Second, Primo's recognizes the important role our vendors play in supplying raw materials and parts to build our products. We strive to provide an efficient, timely service and payment to each of our vendors. These two principles create a full circle effect where each employee and vendor involved with Primo's is on autopilot to achieve our goals and accomplish our mission. If Primo's takes care of its employees and vendors, they will in turn take care of our customers on a daily basis. And then the last thing on that page is company priorities that define our culture. Every business has a culture. That culture is defined by the leadership and management of the company. If we truly care about our customers and their success, pointing right back to the mission, our attitude will reflect that and will be defined by the priorities we set for our daily work. Below is a list of company priorities that define Primo's culture. There are 13 of them. A commitment to a sense of urgency to take care of our business no matter what our individual job may be. If the commode stops up, I'm gonna get it unstopped and clean it up. A commitment to say yes or no on a timely basis, never leave anybody hanging. A commitment to answer emails promptly, to return phone calls, and to communicate in general. A commitment to listen. A commitment to do our part. A commitment to do what is right. A commitment to look for opportunity, especially in face of obstacles. A commitment of understanding that things are going to change. We must change, adjust, keep up, keep growing. We must be a part of the solution and not the problem. A commitment to build our package, a commitment to build and package each and every product like it is the one we would buy. A commitment to provide inventory year-round, which enables us to ship 100% complete 12 months a year. A commitment to plan for tomorrow so that our company may grow profitably and in turn provide more opportunity for our employees and vendors. A commitment to keep our business fun, rewarding, and to change things if it stops being fun and rewarding. 13, a commitment to always remember that it's not about Primo's. It's about the customer. And those are life lessons for me that my parents and my grandparents taught me. And my granddaddy on my daddy's side came over from Greece at 8 years old, no education. And he got everything he got from loving the Lord and hard work. I mean, I don't know any other way to function. And I don't know how some people get, you know, I'm having to deal with stuff right now that somebody didn't do right. Because they took shortcuts, and they shortchanged me and a lot of other people in doing it. It's affected a lot of people. I'm going to move on and get taken care of. Anyway, that's a long spiel there, but those are things that are important. but they relate not only to a business, but to you, to your life. So I encourage everybody, whether they have a business or not, to make a mission statement for themselves. What's their mission in life? And what are the goals? What are the principles? What are the priorities that help you achieve that mission? And then start trying to live by it. I'm telling you what, it'll serve you well, and it'll come back many times over to help you through life and to help you have an opportunity to give back and to help others.
I think as a customer of Primos for many, many years myself, one of the things that I think simplifies everything that you just said, Will, in a nutshell, is part of your tagline, part of the titling you guys did on your videos, part of your culture. It's a very short statement that really surmises everything that you just said, man, and holds true and it resonates, and that is the truth. And I think that was one of the most brilliant things that you guys came up with, was calling your video series The Truth, and everything sort of bounced off of that because it made everything real, and it made everything, as you were talking, one of the things that came into my head was to gain respect from your employees or your friends or your peers or your customers or your salespeople, whoever it is, you got to have their respect first. So if you treat them well, then they respect you and they respond positively because they respect you. Whether they like to do it or not, they respond because they respect you. And I think the other thing that you guys added to that early on in your videos was, this ain't Hollywood. You know, you're going to have to excuse the shaking cameras. You're going to have to excuse it because we're human and this ain't Hollywood. And I think, you know, again, as a comprehensive way to define Primos, and probably, like you said, it all starts with leadership, and you are who, you know, you created Primos, and it became who you wanted it to be through your leadership. And I think those things, the truth, and this ain't Hollywood, would sum all that complicated stuff up. But, you know, if people want to understand this, man, just be honest and be real.
Well, you know, there's a lot of luck, and you have to recognize the luck. But I think I brought forward from my life experiences and my upbringing some great principles and standards and goals and priorities that I didn't know what was going to become the truth. I didn't know there was going to be a truth one. If anybody's got an original truth VHS, it doesn't say truth one. It says the truth, because we didn't know there was going to be a truth two. But we recognize that. And the truth name was coined by a conversation between me and Ronnie Cuz Strickland. Great, fun person to be with. And Cuz got started working with me, and everybody called him Cuz because everybody in Natchez, Mississippi, they couldn't remember anybody's name down there. So if anybody sees anybody, they call him Cuz. So if somebody's walking across the grocery parking lot of the grocery store and you hadn't seen him in a while, hey, Cuz, hey, Cuz. I can't tell you how many times I was Cuz, and then we'd do that. So Cuz was the main Cuz. And we were talking, and I said, what are we going to call this thing, Cuz? And he says, his assignment was this. I said, Cuz, I got a job, and I got to have the job to be able to keep this company going and to try to make it profitable one day. So I said, I'm going to be off some, and we'll go together when we can, but you take anybody that will go, a kid, a daddy, a granddaddy, anybody, and you just video them. It doesn't matter who it is. Employees, not employees, friends, it don't matter. So he got misses, and he got all kind of fun stuff that was just actual had happened. And so we're talking to him. What are we going to call it, Cuz? And he goes, I don't know. All I know is it's the truth. I said, that's it. That's the name of it. Because somebody had just produced a video, and they had a tame turkey with them little short legs, and he had a string tied to his foot, and they had him. He couldn't go so far, and they were shooting at him with a bow, trying to have a bow hunting turkey tape. And it was so repulsive to us hardcore turkey hunters that's where the truth got in there. That's what I remember thinking when he said, all I know is truth. I said, That's it. That's the truth. So that's how that came about. But, you know, as you go through life, you get breaks. Now, another thing to recognize is when you're born, not just the day of the week, the month, the year, but the century and the decade. And there's a book that I recommend that everybody read. It's called Outliers. It's by a famous author, a best-selling author named Malcolm Gladwell. And Outliers, and the CEO of the Bonnier publication gave it to me, owners of Outdoor Life, Field and Stream, Road and Track, all the, I don't know how many hundreds of magazine titles they own. But he gave me the book because he told me one day, he says, we were talking, we were hunting together at my farm. He says, "You're an outlier." I said, "What the heck is that?" And he said, "I'm going to send you a book." So he sent me the book. And here's the truth of the thing. I was born at a certain time. And if I hadn't been born when I was and hadn't been afforded the opportunity through the technology that was available, through the internet coming about, through all the many things that happened in my lifetime that were available that weren't available earlier, I could have never built the company that I built. I don't think I could do it today. It's a whole different world. There's different opportunities out there, some of them even greater. But it's a wonderful story. Did you know that every great hockey player, just about everyone, like 90-something percent, 95% of every great hockey player was born in January, February, or March?
Really?
Yeah.
That's outliers, isn't it?
That's an outliers, and he explains it.
Yeah.
And documents, and here's the deal. When you're 6 years old and you're at school, and you're six and you were born in January, and I'm six and I was born in September, that month difference is so big at that age. Those months are so big.
Exactly.
And you're going to be faster, stronger, and I'm never going to make the starting team, and I'm always going to be left behind, and I'm always going to be a year behind. So tell you how all this works. How do you remember stuff, and you grasp the things that are of value and of life that, and I put it in my head. And one day Mike Powell, who now runs Primos, who we hired from South Carolina to be marketing director 20 years ago, he was struggling. He has two wonderful children. One of his boys was struggling. And he was talking to me about it. And I said, "I'm going to bring you a book tomorrow. You need to read the book." And he said, "Okay." And I said, you need to put him back a year in school. And he goes, "I just don't know if I can do that. He's got friends." I said, "I want you to read his book." He read the book, and it empowered him to hold his kid back because he was a late month in the year child, and he was struggling to compete athletically, mentally. He held him back a year. He's no one in the class.
Mm-hmm. It flipped him, too, because he went from being the runt to the dominant it flipped him 100%, like a 180.
Yeah, so Mike loves his children. He wants them to be successful in life, and he was watching life deteriorate for his son. So, you know, thank heaven. But that book goes through some other things. Bill Gates could have never done what Bill Gates did if Bill Gates hadn't been born when he was and hadn't lived where he lived and hadn't had the opportunity to program and wasn't given free access to the computers all night long. He could have never done it. And it's just amazing. Rockefeller, Vanderbilt. I mean, those are big, big, huge success stories. And there's many more. There's small outliers throughout life. And if you start looking at it and thinking about it. So what did I have? Video. Video wasn't available to the consumer until about 85, so we bought a camera in 86. And we could go video hunts and publish it. Horrible footage, horrible quality, but people didn't care. Man, if they could see a turkey get called up and shot and learn from it, they were in. They were buying. And then when you did that, they were seeing us use our product. Well, dang it, it works for them. I'm going to buy a little Primo's box call. So, you know, that the same thing that made Primo's has gone away. We went from VHS and audio cassettes to DVDs and you know, CDs. And now, we used to sell millions of them a year, DVDs. Now we don't sell none, but we don't make them no more. It's all about YouTube. It's all about streaming. People get the young people that are the purchasers of the country are getting their information somewhere else. So that product, which was a high-margin product, went away. Now, I still like to buy a DVD and sit down and watch it. I'm old school. I'm low-tech, and I'm old school. You know, and that still applies. But the same thing that helped make Prima, one of the things that helped make Prima, is gone. And you got to find that new opportunity. And that's why, Rocky, when you came to see me about social media, I was so interested. I realized the world's changing. We got to change with it. Remember the mission statement. Remember one of the things that we talked about was the principles that we got to remember, that things are going to change, and we got to be willing to change and adapt, because the world is going to change.
Go ahead, and then I'm going to close it out, Jay.
Okay, I was just going to say, I got to mention this because it resonated with me for heck, till right now, even as you're talking and talking about the DVD productions and, you know, successes. One of the things that was most memorable for me as I was, becoming a filmmaker and a photographer and whatnot in the industry, and living out west, was the turkey hunting video that y'all put out, The Truth Western Style. And I remember, it's probably the most memorable thing that you guys have done for me, like in terms of a viewer and a customer of Primos, was that doggone turkey that y'all killed called the Gatekeeper. Remember that?
David Carden killed that turkey. Oh my gosh.
I'll never forget that. And it was so great for me because I was, you know, living out west, and it was really the first Western turkey video that came out on the market. And I was just so enthralled with it because I was right in the middle of Merriam and Rio country, being out in Colorado and Nebraska up in Pine Ridge. And I just remember following along. And that Gatekeeper story was so compelling because he was so difficult to get to. And finally, y'all did it. But, and I remember he had didn't he have a split tail or a feather missing in his fan? Yeah, yeah. How long ago was that, man?
Ooh, I don't know. That would have been in the early 90s. But, you know, I remember Carden, he shot that truck and he stood up, held his gun up and goes, "The Gatekeeper is dead."
Yeah, I'll never forget that.
Oh, well, look, I know that we've taken you a little bit over time today, Will, but, man, what great stuff. I just don't know how to tell you how much we appreciate you being here and walking us through some of these things. Listen, if you take anything away from this, of listening to what Will had to say, one of the most important things I think he said today was, and Bill Cooks, he says it best, if you're the smartest person in the room, you need to find a new room to be in.
You got it, buddy.
Mm-hmm. You got it.
And that's kind of what Will was saying, man. Find somebody that can mentor you, that'll tell you the truth.
Listen.
And listen what that to the, and they're successful. Find somebody that's successful. Whenever you say successful, the first thing that comes to your mind is money. No, that's not, it can be successful in so many different ways. Life is not always about financial success. It's, you know, and you went through that earlier, so I'm not going to jump back into it. But anyway, Will, thank you again. Jake, thank you for being here. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckStuff.com.